What's up, you guys? I'm Andrea.
And I'm Haley.
And you're listening to Inhuman, a true crime podcast.
Before we get into Andrea's case this week, we just wanted to quickly remind you guys that we do have a Patreon. We have two new Patreon episodes that are dropping today. So by the time you're listening to this, they are out there. We have two different tiers. So depending on which tier you join, you can either get an extra audio episode or an extra audio episode and an extra video episode. So I know a lot of you guys are wanting more content and tell us you're sad you're caught up. So there's some more content. We're also going to be doing a live Q&A soon on our Patreon. And we're going to be doing an extra video of how we met because we've gotten a lot of questions about that. So just wanted to quickly remind you guys that that is available. We have it linked in the show notes. If you ever want to join, we'd love to have you as part of that exclusive community and you can get more content from us.
Yeah. Okay. So the case that I want or that I am covering today is unfortunately going to be a shorter one just because there's just not a lot of information. You know, this guy's disappearance is much like we see in a lot of cases, because he's a male and he's a person of color, he just doesn't have a lot of coverage.
Yeah.
I watched an episode on a show on Paramount Plus called Never Seen Again.
Oh, okay.
Which is an amazing show. I have been introduced to so many missing persons cases that I had no idea existed. So I'll probably be covering a lot of those because they obviously are not getting a ton of media coverage.
Yeah.
But today I'm going to be discussing the disappearance, if I can talk, of Michael Somdas. So on September 3rd, 2019, Michael walked out of his mother's home in Ontario, Canada to take a walk and was never seen again.
Oh, no. Okay.
So his mother was actually at the dentist and had seen him earlier in the day and, you know, just as normal, said hello, goodbye, and then went on about her day. It was very common for Michael to take walks. He did that pretty frequently where he would just kind of go off and do his own thing. So the following day, after he was last seen by his family, Michael had actually been picked up by Toronto police, apparently due to an altercation that he had had with a homeless person, and he was held in jail overnight.
Okay.
He was released the following day and reportedly was let out around College Street and Yonge Street. And then 2 days later, on September 5th, he was reportedly spotted near Yonge Street and Carlton Street, which was in Ontario, although neither of these sightings has ever been substantiated.
Okay.
But we do know that Michael did have connections in several Ontario cities, such as Hamilton, Sudbury, North Bay, Brantford, Toronto, and Niagara.
Okay.
Michael was part of a very close-knit family. He was one of five children by his father, Samuel, and his mother, Indra. And his siblings were Wesley, Raisha, Wandita, Leah, and then he was the fifth.
Okay.
Actually, I think he was the oldest, but
yeah.
Their parents had actually migrated from Guyana to Hamilton, Ontario. And at the time of his disappearance, Michael was actually living with his mother in a community of Stony Creek in Hamilton, Ontario. So every single person that knew Michael knew that he was the life of the party. He was often described as being extroverted, charismatic, and witty. His siblings said he coined the phrase, "You bring the party and I'll bring the fun," which is like so cute.
Yeah, I love that. That's adorable.
Yeah. And Michael enjoyed playing soccer in his free time and loved going to local dance club with his sisters. He was very, very close with his siblings. And they actually even worked together in the real estate and home renovations business. I mean, they literally did. It seemed like they did every single thing together.
Oh, okay.
And you can tell in that episode, like, how greatly this has affected their family.
Aww.
About 2 years before Michael's disappearance, he had actually gotten jumped by some people at an event and had sustained a head injury. After this, Michael's family began to notice a change in him. He seemed moodier and had started to become more introverted and kept to himself, which, as we know, this was very unlike him.
Yeah, and that's definitely problematic.
Yeah. He would have violent outbursts and paranoid delusions. According to one of his sisters, Raisha, she said, quote, "We noticed that he wasn't the same. He became very withdrawn. He was agitated all the time. He was edgy all the time. He'd snap for no reason."
That's definitely very concerning, especially because you said at the beginning that this is an unsolved disappearance, that somebody could be that, you know, have an injury like that and it changed so much, because you just never know what's happening in their head. And it's not their fault. It's like literally from an injury.
Yeah. They went to court to have Michael committed and held for a psychological assessment because they were, like, you know, so concerned with his change in behavior.
Right.
But much like here in the States, he was released within 2 days. I guess the hold is 2 days.
Yeah.
And that's when he ended up moving into his mother's basement, where a week later he ended, you know, going missing.
Right. Why wouldn't they take him to, like, the hospital first to, like, make sure he doesn't have, like, a concussion or do, like, brain scans or something?
Well, after he was jumped, he did spend some time in the hospital. And I guess, you know, he had a clean bill of health and was released. I mean, it wasn't...
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if they did scans and, you know, went as far as... I don't know how much investigation they did as far as that goes, but... Right. He was in the hospital for a very short period of time, and then he was released because I guess his injuries weren't that severe.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean...
Yeah, it just makes me think, like, what if there was, like, bleeding in his brain or a blood clot or something like that that could have been affecting him later?
I agree. There, I mean, that he definitely could have sustained an injury that altered his, you know, personality that maybe wasn't showing up on scans or wasn't as, you know, severe, like a concussion or something. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, like, how that happens, but I do know that
some
parts of your brain can be damaged and you can never be the same.
Yeah, and, like, it could have been something that, like, came on later, too.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Michael's family knew something must be terribly wrong for him to go missing and not reach out to them. He never would go longer than 24 hours without speaking to at least one member of his family. Like I said, they were very tight-knit, they were very close, and he had a super, super close relationship with his sisters, especially.
Yeah. Oh.
They immediately contacted police to report him missing, but because Michael was a 40-year-old adult, they were told they had to wait 48 hours before they could officially file a missing persons report.
Drives me so crazy.
Mm-hmm. His family grew more and more concerned that something was terribly wrong, and after waiting the 48 hours, Michael's mother went back to the police station and filed a official missing persons report. She notified the police that Michael had left behind his car, his cell phone, and his laptop. In conjunction with that, Michael's bank account and social media accounts had not been touched since the day he vanished.
Yeah, no, you can't tell me that that's intentionally leaving. No way.
Yeah. They also learned about the altercation that occurred between Michael and the homeless person, and that he was supposed to attend a court hearing on the 7th of September for that incident. Knowing Michael, his family knew he would not want to miss the court hearing and risk getting in trouble.
Right.
And they just knew, you know, he would show up.
Right.
Yet, come September 7th, there was no sign of Michael, and unfortunately, a warrant for his arrest was issued.
Oh my gosh.
His family's fears worsened after this, because they know their brother, their son. They know that he would not intentionally miss. Sure, maybe he would go missing for a couple of days, he was not acting like himself, but they knew that he would not miss a court hearing and risk, you know, being put in jail.
Going to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode.
Michael's family began to grow desperate as they felt police were not taking Michael's case seriously, and they reached out to an organization called Please Bring Me Home. Please Bring Me Home's mission is to solicit anonymous tips regarding cold case missing persons across Canada. Their goal is to find the missing and bring them home to their family and friends. The group was founded in early 2018 by Nick Oldreve, Matthew Knopper, and Melissa Hardwood. Although the history of the organization stretches back to the early 2016. Too early 2016, not the 2016. In total, Please Bring Me Home and its members have assisted in locating 17 missing people.
Wow.
Two of them who were sadly found deceased. Mm. While they do accept anonymous tips, they are also active in the field, speaking with families, friends, and anyone who might have any information as to where these people that have disappeared are.
That's awesome.
It is an uncomfortable reality that those who know key details about these disappearances often do not wish to speak with law enforcement, and this is where this organization comes in. They are not concerned with the criminality of the case, but only locating the missing.
Right. That's an amazing organization. Wow.
I know. I was like, I wonder if we have anything like that here. Probably not, but...
Yeah, probably not.
Hopefully. I mean, hopefully we do, because I feel like...
I feel like there's probably...
I would say Crime Stoppers is kind of like that, but I think they also get involved in the criminality aspect too.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably smaller organizations that do it more locally.
Yeah.
In different areas of the United States, but I feel like there's not a, I don't know, it just, why wouldn't that exist? Or why wouldn't there be like, I mean, this is probably counterintuitive, but like a section of law enforcement that is like, we don't care about the law. We want to find people.
Yeah, we just want to find people. Well, I think in some cases, they want that win, you know? So they need to arrest that person and bring them to justice, which I do understand that to some extent. But
yeah,
in these cases, it's more important to get the family members home safely, or at least, you know, home so they can be buried by their loved ones. But, you know.
Yeah.
So this organization is... obviously committed to raising awareness and keeping the missing persons case in the public eye. And since they are a federally recognized non-for-profit corporation, they do rely solely on donations from outside sources.
Okay.
So I will have all of their information linked in the show notes if you would like to donate or volunteer if you are in Canada.
Awesome.
So knowing that Michael was last seen possibly in Toronto, his family went out there and began passing out missing persons flyers. They questioned people in the streets, asking if anyone had seen or knew of Michael. And there were several people who claimed to have seen him.
Wow.
Whether they knew him and, you know, passed him on the street, or if it was just like a random sighting. There were several sightings of him in Toronto, which none of them could be confirmed, but still, nonetheless. A theory emerged that Michael could possibly be living in the homeless community in Toronto, because they do have a pretty big homeless population there.
And that would explain why so many people had, like, quote-unquote, seen him.
Yeah. So his family, along with a volunteer from the Please Bring Me Home organization, went to several homeless shelters and they gave them the missing persons flyers as well. Sadly, since Michael is an adult, if he were to be seeking refuge at one of the local shelters, they have no legal obligation to report him being there. despite the fact that he is considered a missing person.
Oh, wow.
I know. That's pretty wild to me. What, I mean, I don't know. I feel like they might want to protect individuals because we don't know the whole scenario. Like, maybe somebody is in a scary situation, so they seek refuge at a shelter.
That's true.
Because I know, like, with the women's shelters, they do that here.
Right. And I feel like it would be different if it was, like, if the person was considered, like, sometimes they're considered endangered and missing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense. It just sucks.
It does suck, yeah. It definitely does. Another theory that surfaced was that Michael was seen around Toronto selling drugs.
Okay.
Which his family says, no, there's no way that he would be doing that. But at the same time, he was not his normal self, so we don't really know for sure.
Yeah, like, if he might have gotten lost or something because of a head injury, and then he got to the point where he, like, didn't know even who he was, maybe, and, like, had to do something to survive.
Yeah. So they think that he possibly, you know, maybe got robbed.
Yeah.
For his drugs and met with foul play, or that he had gotten involved with a seedy group of individuals and met with foul play. Another theory is that he potentially went off and committed suicide.
Yeah.
Since he was not acting like his normal self, he seemed, you know, a little bit depressed, but, you know, they've never found his body or remains. So,
right.
Of course, this is just a theory at this point.
Okay.
But the family does follow any and every lead, even if it seems unlikely. His family says that the worst part is not having any resolution as to where their loving brother is.
Yeah.
Even if he doesn't want to be found, they're okay with that. They just want to know that he's alive and safe.
Yeah.
Or if he's not alive, they just want the opportunity to lay his body to rest.
Yeah. That makes me so sad, because it really, just from what you've talked about, I just really feel like he maybe had some sort of brain injury. And because of that, I mean, we've seen that in other, especially men mysteriously missing that get into car crashes. And it's like they likely had a brain injury and they wandered off, sometimes taking their clothes off and wandering off. Like, it happens.
Yeah.
And he clearly has got into something that could have potentially caused a brain injury.
Yeah.
And what if he had some sort of injury that they didn't catch right away at the hospital, because maybe they weren't looking for something that intense, and he somehow got lost, and who knows? Like, he could have met with foul play. He could be out there somewhere, like, and just not even know who he is.
Yeah. That's what I think, too. I think that's the most likely scenario, that he did get some type of brain injury that likely developed more severely over time, or like you said, it wasn't severe in the hospital, and so they didn't think, like, he wasn't acting differently at that point, you know, and then as time went on, he changed.
Right. And they could have done, like, a concussion test, and it could have not been a concussion, but like I said, like, brain bleeding or something. Obviously, I'm also not a doctor, so I don't know, but it could have been something that, like, only would have showed up on a scan, and maybe they didn't do a scan because he didn't seem like he had a concussion, so, like, he's fine.
And there are things that will show up on an MRI that might not necessarily show up on a CT scan, and maybe they didn't do every scan in the, you know, in the book or whatever, but I mean, we just don't know. We don't, unfortunately, we don't have all of that information. And even his family, I think, you know, they didn't at the time see any reason to have him further examined or whatever.
Right,
and
he was fine.
They released him because he was okay. He was recovering, and they released him, and he went back home and changed into a totally different person.
That's so heartbreaking.
Yeah.
So what does his family think happened? Do they think something like that may have happened, or do they suspect something else?
I don't think they really have a solid theory. I think they think that he is out there still.
Okay.
Because in the documentary or the episode, they do address him.
Okay.
So part of me thinks that they think that he's still alive and he's either hiding out for some reason, or he is maybe ashamed and doesn't want to come home, because he did have an altercation with his father at one point, and from what I understand, things did get a little bit physical. Like, I don't think he, like, injured his father, but maybe there was, like, some shoving or, you know, stuff that was completely out of character for him.
Right.
So maybe he left, you know, maybe they think that he left out of shame and just doesn't want to come home. But I do feel like they think that he's still alive. And I even think that he's probably still alive and either just...
Yeah, I think so too.
Stuck because he's not sure of the circumstances of his life anymore. Or he, you know, could be ashamed of the things that he's had to do to survive. Who knows?
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I honestly think he's out there and, like, got hurt from that altercation, doesn't know who he is, doesn't know, or even if he knows who he is, like, doesn't know how to get home kind of thing. Yeah. I definitely think that that could be the case, and that's so sad.
I know. That's so sad. Especially because, like, he was such an outgoing, like, positive person, and then this thing happened to him, and he was totally different. Which means that he may not be inclined to seek help while he's out there. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's so heartbreaking.
I know. His mother, Indra, is incredibly unwell, and her other children claim that she is actually physically sick from being so brokenhearted.
Oh my gosh. That reminds me of, like, Amanda Berry's mother.
Oh, I know. Oh my gosh. There was a video in the episode that I watched, and she's just, like, begging. And you can tell, like, by her looks. I mean, she's, you know, an older woman, but the way she looked in the pictures at the beginning of the episode to the way she looked in the video, like, you can just tell that her health had dramatically declined.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's what, you know, the siblings say, that since Michael's disappearance, their mother's health has declined dramatically.
Oh.
Their father also is brokenhearted, and he has really clung to his faith, and he never stops praying for his son's return. And he even addresses that in the episode as well.
Wow.
That, you know, every day he prays for his son to come home, as well as, you know, hundreds of people that they know pray daily for him to return. Unfortunately, like we see in many cases of people with color, Michael's case did not get the media coverage that it deserved.
Of course.
There were other people who had gone missing around the same time, and they were seen covered on news outlets all over Canada. But sadly, Michael's case was not. And this, coupled with the fact that people don't take it seriously when men go missing, has been another unfortunate injustice in Michael's case, I think, because... men do go missing.
Yeah.
And not every abduction is sexually charged or motivated. And I feel like that's the reason why they don't take missing persons cases of men seriously, because they're thinking, like, how can a woman, you know, take a man? Or, like, how can another man take another man?
Yeah.
Because of, like, the strength or whatever stereotype they want to put on the situation. But... And it's not always an abduction, yeah. Like you were saying, like these people who get in car accidents and they have brain injuries and they wander off without their clothing or whatever the case is. Like, there are so many scenarios that could be in these cases, and they literally just explore like one or two, and then they're like, oh, this person left on their own fruition. And it's like,
and it's so frustrating in this case too, because it's like, he literally could have just wandered off, and if it was taken more seriously and reported, somebody may have seen him in the area, and he could have,
They say every single investigator, every single detective, the first 48 is the most important. Then why are we making these families wait 48 hours?
Yeah.
To file a report.
Yeah. There's literally a show called The First 48 because that is what is important. Like, yeah, that's really frustrating.
And if you don't have the means to put, you know, 100 individuals on the case to look for him, there are so many people that are willing to volunteer their time to search for these missing people.
Yeah.
I mean, like we see in the case of Daniel Robinson, like, weekend after weekend after weekend for a year.
Yeah.
Hundreds of people have showed up to search for him in the desert of Arizona.
Yeah.
So why would people, I mean, there's so many options, and it's just, I don't know.
Yeah. It's very frustrating.
It's unacceptable, and things need to change. Obviously, even in Canada.
Yep.
Things need to change.
Yep.
So Michael is described as being 6'3". He has a thin build with black curly hair. I will say, in the last photo which was his mugshot from the incident with the homeless person. He does have kind of like blondish looking highlights in his hair.
Okay.
So he does have black curly hair, but in that picture, he could potentially still have, you know, blonde highlights.
Right.
He has brown eyes and a medium complexion. He also has a scar on his left leg and knee, and he has a tattoo on his left upper arm, and it's a tribal design.
Okay.
Hamilton police ask that anyone with any information as to the whereabouts of Michael, please contact Detective Constable Chelsea Knowles at 905-546-2917 or Detective Sergeant Ben the Bodo at 905-546-2907. You can also call 800-222-8477, which is the Crime Stoppers of Hamilton, or you can go to their website at crimestoppershamilton.com.
Okay.
You can also submit a tip on the Please Bring Us Home website or call their anonymous tip line at 1-226-702-2728. And of course, I will have all that linked in the show notes.
Awesome.
We can find this man. Like, I fully, in my heart of hearts, believe that this man can be found. And
yeah,
whether that means, you know, him be deceased or him be alive and well, I think that with a little bit more effort, he can be recovered and brought home to his family and they can have some closure and some peace.
I agree. 1,000%. It just needs more people to pay attention. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure someone has seen him. And like we always say, if you see something, say something. And if you know, are in this area, especially Hamilton, Toronto, you know, Sudbury, North Bay, Brantford, Toronto, Niagara, wherever, and you think you see this man, like, reach out, because it might not be him, but it might be him.
Very well could be.
But I just want to thank you guys so much for listening today. We will catch up with you on Thursday with a brand new case. And until next time, keep it human.
Bye.